Her weekly commentary relates the news of the week to the evidence emerging about the conspiracy which allegedly maintains its power by force over America's electoral and executive processes. And now, here's May.
Good afternoon. Dialogue Conspiracy, June the 10th, 1974. Well, they'll write into the news as it pertains to political assassinations and conspiracies in the state of California and across the United States. The newspaper this morning had an article about Leon Jaworski's staff, and I can't help but make comments because it's reminiscent of the kind of work he did for the Warren Commission. Jaworski represented the state of Texas on the Warren Commission, and that's a pretty big job, being from a CIA Houston Foundation that he was, a board of trustees and a lawyer, and the Mexican money connections involved in the Kennedy assassination. He was the watchdog for the state of Texas. Today, I read Leon Jaworski has a silent staff, that in doing his prosecution for the Watergate work, he applied to the School for the Deaf and in Washington, D.C., a particular school, and he has deaf mutes working in the office that cannot hear or speak, and they're totally deaf, and he's applied for these young people to carry documents back and forth and sort the mail. That is one way Mr. Jaworski it's like having the eunuchs in the harem, is to keep the staff silent because there's too many leaks coming out. I have the minutes of the Warren Commission meeting December the 16th, 1964, the third meeting when Alan Dulles on the Warren Commission was saying we have to have guards over our notes when we work, we have to have a safe. And Senator Russell said, well, they'll be on duty 24 hours a day. And John J. McCloy offered some contributions on tight security. And Alan Dulles said, everyone in charge has to have top secret clearance. Earl Warren answered, yes, we wouldn't deal with anything less than that. Earl Warren said, we'll have to borrow our secretarial staff that have all been cleared from the Department of Defense. Keep in mind that Defense Intelligence Agency and NASA were behind the planning of the assassination of the president, so the Department of Defense will send the appropriate secretaries. Alan Dulles says, well, I was going to get you one from the CIA, one of those who had to leave for maternity reasons. We can get her quickly. So the pregnant informers and CIA agents were sent as a secretarial staff. Dulles said, we'll probably have to pay them, or won't we? And Rankin said, no, they'll be given to us. It would jeopardize the continuity of their service. And Earl Warren said, I'd be inclined to borrow them, and we'll see if it creates any problem. We'll discuss it another time. So the secretarial staff, because of a conflict in Washington, the power structure between the CIA and the DIA, and a lot of people talking and leaking, it's very convenient. Leon Jaworski is working with a staff of deaf mutes, so they can go into the next room and decide who will they let off the hook the next day. That's the way the investigation is going. And they can do their work in as much secret as possible. Senator James Aberesk, get your pencil. I have a lot of names and letters for you to write this week. People call, what can we do? How can we get involved? Somebody drove down from Oregon and called me this morning. I've come to see you. I said, I'm busy writing an article. He said, I've only got 1 week. What can I do? Where can I move to make social changes? So many things are coming down. I get calls all the time. Get your pencil and make a note of a letter to write to Senator James C. Aberesk, A-B-O-U-R-E-Z-E-Z-K. He's a Democrat from South Dakota. If you miss the name and want it, write to KLRB, Box 3904, and I'll give you that address in Carmel, California. There's an operation in Washington, D.C. that's been going on since 1963, since the time that John Kennedy's been dead, called the Police Operations Control Center in Washington, D.C. It trains police for foreign dictatorships, and we've trained the military forces and the police forces in 77 countries that have become military dictatorships. We've taught them community control, subversive methodology, insurgent threats, bomb-making, counterintelligence, psychological warfare, and it's been under the guise of the International Development, the Agency for International Development, the AID. You saw some of that in the movie, The State of Siege. There's a vote coming down soon in the Senate. It was defeated a year ago. Senator James Aberesk had it on the floor of the Senate. It was defeated, but he feels that the climate is ready now to bring this thing to a head, and if enough votes go in at the Senate, the funding will be cut off completely. And remember, the chickens are going to come home to roost. The things that we've done with the electrodes, electric bars on genitals and the torturing and so forth will be brought into this country. We've done it to 77 countries, and there's no longer an excuse for saying we didn't know. If you have a conscience, you don't like tortures, you don't like political assassinations, or the infiltration of American money to do this to other countries, exploitation, this is your chance to encourage a good senator to defeat this bill, which is coming up. The excuse for this school was, in quotes, to keep internal order in countries where there are foreign investments, that it is necessary for a favorable climate that doesn't have violence in order for American capital to invest in those countries. What it actually means is that foreign profits are reduced if the American investor gives a fair wage in Chile to somebody who goes into the copper mines or into 77 other countries. The American profit is reduced, and it takes the military police to keep the people as literal slaves and enforce this genocide all over the world. So in order for the American to invest and get enough investment from his profit, we have to supply the police to keep the people subdued and murder them if necessary. Write the Senator Abarth in Washington, D.C., Democrat. Wednesday of this week up in Sacramento, there's a bill that I vote for information about. There'll be a vote on June the 12th. By the time some of you get this program, it will be over. The deciding vote. But the judiciary in Sacramento is still an important bill to show how the schemers are one jump ahead of us. I've referred to it on other programs. It's Senate Bill 2233, June the 12th, 1974. If any of you here within this California area can get up to Sacramento, try to get there at 9 o'clock Wednesday morning, room 4203. Alfred Song is the chairman. It's the bill introduced by Moscone that would... It had to do with the coroners that I read on the air before. Coroners, this is what it is, in quotes, would allow the coroner to determine the extent of inquiry into violent, sudden, or unusual deaths. And that is a very dangerous bill because the coroner is a political appointment. It doesn't necessarily have to be a doctor. There's CIA coroners all over the country that can cover murders and call them justifiable homicides. That what the bill should read is that in the event of violent or sudden or unusual death, a team of five doctors, not government educated or employed, should be paid to examine the medical evidence separately and testify at a grand jury hearing as to the cause of death. This is a very deceitful bill. It's a very dangerous bill. I have a book called Where Death Delights, put out by Marshall Houts, and there's a chapter in there on Dr. Milton Helpert, chief medical examiner in New York City. Did over 60,000 autopsies and violent deaths, 10,000 gunshot wounds, and he did a description of the autopsy of President John Kennedy when Dr. Hume, the Navy commander, was asked, what experience have you had with respect to any gunshot wounds? Dr. Hume said most of his work was with natural disease and not forensic pathology. They called Commander Boswell, who was the second man who helped with the autopsy of President John Kennedy. And Arlene Specter of the Warren Commission said, what experience did you have with forensic pathology and bullet wounds? And he had absolutely none. He couldn't mention any. And the third doctor, Lieutenant Colonel Pierre Fink of Armed Forces Institute of Pathology, was asked by Arlene Specter, what training did you have in missile wounds? And Dr. Fink said approximately 400. And when it was examined, he had only done autopsies on two bullet wounds in his life. So you had three men with no experience in bullet wounds who did not examine the clothing of the president that was murdered, where the bullet wounds that they said existed in a certain location didn't actually match the garments. They took autopsy x-rays at the time that John Kennedy was killed and didn't develop those x-rays or look for other bullets in his body. We have the coroners down in... Monterey County right here, the deputy coroner, Robert Shaw, Monterey, is in duty with Army Intelligence in Germany. He's not a doctor. Mary Jo Kopechne's death at Chappaquiddick. The coroner sent her body away back to Pennsylvania, no autopsy ordered. Later, when her blouse was still around to be examined, there was blood on the back, blood on the collar, no explanation how the blood got there. It didn't come from drowning. the orders were no autopsy. There is a very dangerous precedent to allow a political appointment to determine the extent of the autopsy on controversial murders, so it's important to get to Sacramento or to follow up on this bill and find out how it went and what motivation was behind such a bill. Another man who's seeking power is William Colby, as if he didn't have enough power. And then he has filed a request to change the National Security Act of 1946 in order to make it a crime, a more serious crime, to leak out information about the intelligence agency, the CIA. This was brought about by Victor Marchetti writing a book exposing some of the operations of the CIA, or Daniel Ellsberg talking about the lies and false provocations that lead us into a national war that kills 45,000 people here and millions in Asia. When these people have a conscience and want to come clean and talk, they have to be punished. So William Colby he's seeking legislation of a penalty of 10 years in prison or a fine of $10,000 to leak information about the intelligence agency to the outside. And I think it's very important that you also write to members of the House and Judiciary or Congress and let them know that this is nothing but a concealment. It doesn't protect national security. It protects criminals and the intelligence agencies who have been doing massive murders and conspiracies the last 10 years in America as well as all over the world. Now we're on to the SLA and the prison trip for a great part of this program. The majors are back making their voices heard. Six members of the SLA are murdered and three are on the run. So the majors have to get into the act. I was waiting to hear their voices because they'll have a lot to say when the remaining are dead. But they're coming forward now. One is the Attorney General William Saxby. The other is Gerald Ford. And the third is Evel Younger. And in terms of political conspiracies and assassinations, this is the most dangerous assembly of gentlemen in power today because of the work that they've done with the past conspiracies. I think the way to get rid of William Saxby, like John Mitchell or Patrick Gray or Robert Mardian or Richard Kleinitz or the other evils of the same ilk, is to not argue with them at their logical level of point of view, but look up the Costa Rica connections of Mr. Saxby. Look up the relationship of the American Nazi Party on the police forces in Ohio. The investment, the pinball investment that Saxby was into in Vegas and with other people before he became the Attorney General and his connections to the Teamsters Unit. The man is obviously and overtly a racist. He makes anti-Semitic remarks. He makes, now he's back into the SLA, and he gave a speech this week. The greatest cloud in history over America is Watergate, and he says the nation may not be able to surmount another scandal of such dimensions. Now that's Mr. Saxby, who wanted to end the investigation of the Ohio Kent State. If he was nominated, he would not have that. The big scandals of the country haven't even begun to be opened up. They're just surfacing. The Robert Kennedy hearing in Los Angeles, James Ray's hearing now. He's ready to name the four wealthy people that hired two gunmen, and he was the patsy. That Supreme Court has cleared that case to go through. The John Kennedy information is coming in every day, and so Saxby has to say that America couldn't stand another scandal. We haven't even touched the scandals. All we're doing is slapping their wrists back there for perjury or the crime of committing conspiracy, but we haven't really told what they were doing. He mentioned also that would-be tyrants come in many disguises other than stormtroopers. Some in blue jeans are apostles of new left terrorism. This is what he's saying, the blue jeans and new left terrorism. The new left terrorism is an SLA, is the CIA, and he's going to use it for all its mileage if you don't get into some of the facts, and I'll read you some of them on the air. Saxby had his say. Ford had this Sunday was giving his little speech about the SLA and the violence, and he defended the police down there. He said, in quotes, an outcry against the police in Los Angeles because the police dared to shoot back at a murderous group of self-proclaimed revolutionaries. Now, the murderers were arrested. Romero and Little are alleged with the crime of Dr. Foster. They're in jail up in the Bay Area. So the SLA, if nine of them took $10,000 from the Hibernia Bank, that equaled about $1,000 each that they're guilty of robbing. But his after them, and Gerald Ford uses the words, he's a takeover of the J. Edgar Hoover era. There's not one scintilla of truth. There's not one iota. He's using the same words. They're tiresome. Putting down the SLA, praising the police, and warning us about these radical terrorists, and he'll be beating this horse as long as we let him. Ebel Younger, silent for a long time. His agencies helped fund part of DeFries' salary. He was called as a witness by DeFries to testify in 1970 when DeFries went to jail because he wanted to tell about his work for the LAPD. Now Younger comes out this week, violence inspired by the SLA. And he says that they will spawn more violence and dangerous acts. Younger is saying that when violence is publicized, other emotional cases follow suit. That's why the camera, the big eye, had to be there, called hours in advance to photograph the burning, to watch the violence. They photograph it, give it the publicity. Then they use the excuse that the publicity is starting more violence, when every bit of this could be checked out in advance. I don't have time to run down all the phony kidnappings that the CIA has attached to the SLA story, but there was a story in the news this week about Bobby Joe Keese. Now, I mentioned the phony kidnappings that I'm writing about in the Realist article now, the Reg Murphy in Georgia, George Jackson in Florida, Ben Maidenberg in Ohio, John Cosadillo by Cubans from Miami, Betty Valenda in Virginia, Eunice Kronholm in Minnesota, John Patterson in Mexico, Robbie Richard, Albert Dancer in Miami. I have a list of already what I consider 22 phony kidnappings done by the intelligence agencies, and the people that did them are getting a slap on the wrist. One was shot in the head in Minneapolis, a witness. He wasn't even charged with kidnapping. And if we follow the court cases of these kidnappings, the truth would come out, how they tried to link them to the Hearst case. They all followed the rash of them after Patricia Hearst was kidnapped. But one of the people, John Patterson, is a diplomat in Mexico who was picked up. And at the time that he was missing, the Mexican authorities said they saw him with a friend in a car, having his own car towed away at a gas station, and he wasn't even nervous. And there was a story that the long 500-page ransom note that was left on his desk, there wouldn't be time to leave a letter in the time they kidnapped and took him. Well, wouldn't you know that a CIA agent who has used the CIA as a defense in other things, like in Vietnam or hijacking, was arrested or held in regards to the Patterson kidnapping. Of course, the CIA said they had no connection. He has no connection with the agency. But it turns out the man that left the handwritten ransom note and delivered it, who was involved with the whole Patterson kidnapping, is attached to the CIA. And with a good investigative team in every city following up these cases, which I hope they will do, we could blow open how the National Security Council is spreading terror by creating these little incidences like the bulk of the hijacking cases in order to get a guard at every airport. Now, I'm going into information I got this week and information I've had that I want to share with you. The Department of Corrections said that they're going to tighten restrictions and make changes in the prisons, in the 12 California prisons. And according to Philip Guthrie, this was on the news service this week, the activities of reform groups will be curtailed, and persons visiting inmates will be subject to closer checks on their backgrounds and their motives. The reason for tightening the rules is simply this, that the SLA was formed, and at least 5 of the 10 alleged founders of the SLA had previously been active in prison reform group in Vacaville, known as the Black Culture Association. Now, I have 17 motives for the National Security Council forming the SLA, and one of those motives was to tighten prison visits by prison reform, because the people on the outside are getting aware of the conspiracies that are put against the prisoners on the inside, and they have to tighten it. They have to have an excuse to keep visitors from coming in. The excuse here was of the group that many of them that were involved in prison reform started with the SLA in Vacaville. Well, I have information. It came from Sherman Skolnick in Ohio and other sources from Indiana, and I wrote about it briefly in the first article I did in the Barb. Angela Atwood, Gary Atwood, Emily Harris, and William Harris belonged to the Mod Squad of the Indiana State Police, intelligence informers for the Indiana State Police. Two of them have Patricia Hearst at the present time. All four of them were allegedly teachers. They were college graduates. Their teaching was a cover for their activities. Angela Atwood worked over at the Bank of America building, the new Transamerica building, as a waitress in San Francisco. William Harris came out. He graduated a master's degree in urban affairs. And Colson Westbrook of the CIA, who was at the University of California, and went into the Vacaville prison with these people, teaches black language under the Department of Urban Affairs. The teaching credential was a cover. The Harrises and the Atwoods moved to California in 1972, at which time Emily Harris and William Harris infiltrated the black guerrilla movement in the prison system because they want to frame Doc Holliday and cut off the black guerrilla movement. They infiltrated the Venceremos, the Chino Defense Fund, the Vietnam Veterans Against the War. And now the excuse to close down the prisons is we had all these do-gooders doing prison reform. Colson Westbrook was on KGO yesterday, and I called him up and got to talk for about 12 minutes before they cut me off. And when I mentioned the connections of these people from the Indiana State Police being part of his black culture group, he acted very innocent and said, I often wondered about some of these people. And when I began to read the information I had about him with the Central Intelligence Agency and the purpose of his being in the prison, I got to about three sentences. And then KGO, the radio announcer, Carlo Prescott, said, we've had enough, and that's it. Carlo Prescott is a black man who was inside the California prisons. He has a radio program here in California. And he had Colson Westbrook on for 4 hours, praising him, telling what a marvelous man he was. And Carlos always wants to make prison reform in California. But when you call up and accuse the man that's sitting next to him of being responsible for tightening the prison reform for all prisoners from now, he can't handle that. He thinks because Westbrook is black and he is black, that a white person is dividing black people and it's racism. When you call him and give him this information, he can't handle it, and he gets emotional, and he turned off. But one of the 15 purposes of the SLA was to stop people like myself and other lawyers and interested persons now from getting into the prison system and finding out what's coming out. Well, what are we finding out? I found out the name of the man at Soledad Prison that let Donald DeFries have transportation in the San Francisco Bay Area. He's a superintendent at Soledad Prison, and I have now sent that name to 20 members of Congress and 20 members of the Assembly in Sacramento, as well as the grand jury. I want to testify in San Francisco. Another officer in charge of Soledad has left there and is now living in Sacramento. He also was responsible for Donald DeFries leaving Soledad Prison. Donald DeFries had conjugal visits in a trailer outside the prison. His wife is in Cleveland, and he was allowed outside the prison, in addition, allowed to walking out. They're talking about prison reform, and I want to read you some letters I wrote to the prison at Soledad and to Washington and Sacramento this week. I have the name of three officers at Soledad Prison who called in a specific prisoner who offered him a chance to escape from a California prison, Soledad, in March of 1974 if he would join the SLA. Another thing he was to do was to kill a fellow prisoner in addition to being allowed to escape. The prisoner that he was to kill has been an informer for the police department. I have his name. He just happened coincidentally to be in a prison cell with another friend of mine this last December, and they were setting this man up to testify against Hugo Pinnell when the San Quentin Six came to trial in the Bay Area. And because he was in the cell with a friend of mine, he turned him on to the thanks you get for testifying is that you get murdered anyway. So I have the names of three officers of Soledad Prison that returned to the proper authorities. If the FBI was looking for Patricia Hearst in March, which they were not, if the police were looking for Patricia Hearst, and which they were not, because they meant to extend this thing as far as it's going, and they could know where they are right now in L.A., and I could give them some hints to where they are. If they wanted that, how can they release a man from Soledad and tell him to join the SLA? Because they had to make it look like an army of a lot of blacks, a lot of people in on this army. It was nothing but a group of military men from Southeast Asia with control officers of the Central Intelligence Agency and a couple of legitimate radical leftists, not politically actives, up in the Bay Area, Ms. Moon, Camilla Hall. They got poets, artists to give it the Berkeley feeling so it wouldn't it look like an authentic group. And the enforcement people have been behind this for 101 reasons. And I want you to know that the excuse of tightening prison reform is a lie and a fraud. And if you want to write to Philip Guthrie, Department of Corrections, in Sacramento, California, right? This is the man, the spokesman. I don't know whether he's a public relations officer or not. Write to the Department of Corrections, Sacramento, Philip Guthrie, and ask where we get a proper hearing to not tighten the reform groups, that it's time that outside get in the prisons and make the changes. The men inside get killed and hung and poisoned and drugged, get electroshock if they talk too much, and they don't want them talking, and that's the purpose of creating this terror in the prisons. I wrote a letter to Mr. Stone. He's in charge of the California Department of Corrections. January the 4th, I said, "Dear Mr. Stone, I'm writing to you about Robert Hyde, O-Wing and Soledad. Several months ago, Mr. Hyde was blinded in one eye, caused by circumstances in your control. Following that, he was scheduled for psychosurgery in Vacaville and was moved there. I wrote to Mr. Clonan and spoke at length with him, assemblymen in Sacramento, as well as physicians. In the Bay Area, our promise, there is no psychosurgery in Vacaville. It happens that prisoners speak of this and other procedures to their brain which they do not want or appreciate. As a result of my calls, Mr. Hyde was returned to Soledad. One letter I received from him since his return told me he was placed in solitary confinement in the hole. He did not state the charges, and I figured they were caused by the trouble he stirred at Vacaville. Now I've been told that two prisoners in O-Wing have been offered the usual goodies that you have to offer, lighter sentences, etc., if they will kill Robert Hyde. One of these men had refused psychosurgery 4 months ago at Vacaville. They are promised years, five up to the hole, if they don't kill Mr. Hyde. Violence in the prisons? Your men know very well where it's coming from. It comes from the guards, provocateurs, your mind-erasing threats, your silencing of the informed persons. I know what Mr. Hyde has to offer as a valuable human being. He can't be used by your various prison conspiracies to serve your purposes within those walls, so he has to be murdered. What is going to take place before you men stop being a law unto yourselves? You run those institutions like the Roman Colosseum, the gladiator show for the guards' entertainment. I hope the authorities move on your actions, and the sooner the better. You are the criminals, and given the chance, those men could make it. Once behind your wall, they are pitted against each other. The plan to kill Mr. Hyde or hurt men who refuse to kill Mr. Hyde or anybody else will be told out through the prison system until the echo breaks your ears. Why can't you become civilized?" Signed, May Brussel. And I sent another letter to Captain Walker to the same effect of the Department of Corrections. I got a letter from the Department of Corrections today, and it said, "On May 22nd, Mr. Hyde was returned to the correctional training facility following a 90-day psychiatric observation at California Medical Facility. Let me assure you, he was untouched by the program, mentally or physically." Signed, Roger Schoffel, for Raymond Precuniate, Department of Corrections. What I want to say on the air, that he was returned in less than 90 days because the psychosurgery they wanted to do was halted and followed with a death contract. And what I also want to add is important. He was untouched by the program, mentally or physically, only because I have a radio program, I write articles, I can speak publicly, and at one public engagement, a lawyer came in and stepped into the situation. What about the other men in prisons all over this country? What about the other cities where we don't have dialogue, conspiracy, or people don't know what's going on? How can we break through this wall and get to the public officials about what is taking place? That is what the SLA is about, to stop us. Now, if there are any prisoners who have similar experiences of threats of death, offers to kill somebody, offers to kill on the outside, I also received a letter through an attorney of a man who's given the chance to escape if he will kill on the outside. Have you read how many articles lately ex-prisoners are caught killing somebody? They're trapped. So if you write to me directly, the prison officials will read it and take it out on you. Write to your lawyers, and in the letter, give my name, May Brussel, Box 3904, Carmel, California, and I will share your experiences and complete a file which I have of about 130 letters, which will be put into a book and forcefully will move this thing going. Now, because they come out this week, the Department of Corrections, and say that they're tightening prison reform in 12 prisoners because the visitors brought trouble and roots of the SLA, let me read you the background of Colston Westbrook, who brought the Black Cultural Association into Vacaville. I read three sentences of what I'm going to read to you on KGO yesterday, and then Carla Westbrook said, we've had enough. This information comes from back east, from Crick. I'll give you the address. You can write to them. It's a group. It's called Counter Spy Campaign Organizing Committee, the Fifth Estate, P.O. Box 647, Ben Franklin Station, Washington, D.C., 20044. Counter Spy Campaign. It's the Fifth Estate, P.O. Box 647. You can send information if you're a student or community activist. Let them know. If you're a concerned citizen who wants to prevent techno-fascism, let them know. If you have a donation of $10, let them know and write to them and ask them what you can do, and they'll send you information in literature. It's a group made up of men in the intelligence community who are stopping every fascistic move that comes along that is not intelligence for national security, and they're helping provide information, as well as other people around the country are now providing information such as that on the Atwoods and the Harrises and the command. And I'm reading you some information compiled on Colson Westbrook, who formed the Black Cultural Association with Donald DeFries. And on previous shows, I've given the background of Donald DeFries working for the police department, kept from arrest, told the judge he wanted to come clean. That's the time to erase his mind. So from there, he was sent directly to Vacaville, late 69, when the Black Cultural Association was started. And in 1970, he meets Colston Westbrook, who's his teacher, Donald DeFries' teacher. Here is the background of Colston Westbrook. Colston Westbrook was a CIA advisor in South Korean Central Intelligence Agency until 62. His cover in Korea and elsewhere were U.S. Army and U.S. Air Force. His linguistic training took place during this period. After 1962, Westbrook was enrolled in the International Christian University in Tokyo for a special training in new psychological warfare techniques. During this clandestine training and afterwards, he operated illegally under the cover of the AID. He publicly claimed to have a personal line of communication to the Premier of Cambodia. Upon completion of his training, Westbrook undertook agent handling assignments in Cambodia, Thailand, India, Japan, Hong Kong, the Philippines, Okinawa, and the Soviet Union. His actions became so notorious that the CIA then was forced to change his cover. Incidentally, we know that William Harris traveled to the Soviet Union. Willie Wolfe of the SLA was in Europe for 9 months before he arrived into the Berkeley area. He immediately enrolled in the class that Colston Westbrook was teaching at University of California and was the first of that group to enter into the prison system. Upon February the 5th, 1966, to September 19th, 1969, Westbrook was listed as the administrator for civilian firm Pacific Architects and Engineers of Los Angeles, California, a multinational consortium. On the covert task of the huge Pacific Architects and Engineers firm in Asia, they provided the logistical support to the CIA Phoenix program. In this, the Pacific Architects and Engineers were joined by multinational corporations. Westbrook's job under the Pacific Architects and Engineers cover of the Phoenix program was the indoctrination of assassination and terrorist cadre. I also might mention that William Harris, in addition to traveling in Europe prior to coming out to California, William Harris did a stint in Southeast Asia. And also, Joseph Romero signed up for two stints in Southeast Asia and was in the terrorist cadre down there, so their paths had a possibility of crossing before California arrival. The control of the assassination research, Westbrook was sent to Vacaville to head the Special Behavior Modification Black Cultural Association project. At Vacaville, Westbrook recruited agents to lead the Black Cultural Association. The man he chose has worked off and on since 67 as an informer and agent provocateur for LABD, in 68 for the elite California political intelligence, the LAPD's criminal conspiracy section. The agent that Westbrook recruited at Vacaville was Donald DeFries, later to be known in the public as Sin Q, Field Marshal of the Sudanese Liberation Army. 1969, the Black Cultural Association was organized at Vacaville Medical Facility by Professor Colston Westbrook of the University of California, covertly the Central Intelligence Agency. Westbrook, incidentally, is on the Extension Division. He's not a full-trained faculty member of the University of California. The Black Cultural Association was an extension of the Psychological Experimentation Project at Vacaville and elsewhere in the California prison systems. The overall name for the experimentation, behavior modification. The location, known as Category E and C at Vacaville, houses a behavior modification unit, and this unit provided candidates for the Black Cultural Association. Behavior modification experimentation at Vacaville and elsewhere in the California prison system received their illegal funding, because this does not come through the state money, and direction from the CIA through its West Coast base of operation known as the Stanford Research Institute, SRI, of Menlo Park, California. The specialty of the program is to cultivate black prisoners who formerly were associated with the Black Panther Party into an intense hatred towards the Black Panther Party, other revolutionary groups, and other black leaders. One of the most severe current cases is that of the former Black Panther member Lloyd Lamar Mims. The cover of the project was the rhetoric of black pride and black separation. I'll read these charges, then we'll talk about black pride and bringing these people into the prison and instigating feelings against a man such as Dr. Marcus Foster and Huey Newton. Professor Colston Westbrook is an operator of the Central Intelligence Agency. The Black Cultural Association was itself a Central Intelligence Agency behavior modification program run by Stanford Research. The BCA concept was devised by Westbrook's control, a board member of the Stanford Research. His name is known. The evidence suggests he was the deep coverage chief of the West Coast for Psychological Warfare Division of the CIA. His name and the evidence of it belongs to various organizations in this country and will be available when an independent commission is set up or grand jury to go into the California prison systems. You see, instead of coming down on prison reform, it's time for all people outside to write to the Department of Corrections, write to the grand jury in San Francisco, or to Congress, and say, before you tighten one prison in California, which was the purpose of the SLA, let's get to the heart of the DeFreeze matter and Colston Westbrook. Back to this matter, we can say that Westbrook's CIA spy master, that's the one over him, was linked to another counterinsurgency expert whose name is William Herman. Herman, an advisor to Ronald Reagan and Rand Corporation and the Hoover Center on Violence and the development for Reagan of the plan to win the minds and hearts of people of California. And that goes into that UCLA School of Violence that wants to use the Nike bases, the secret Nike bases out in Topanga Canyon to plant electrodes into prisoners' heads and do brain experimentation. The Stanford Research Institute's experimentation is an extension of the work now underway at Langley, Virginia by the CIA. At both Langley and Menlo Park, the research and development departments are concerned with the use of drugs such as Librium, as well as organic drugs which are purchased by SRI agents in Latin America. This goes back into the Vesco operation, the drugs, the Costa Rica, the charges now of drugs coming in from Southeast Asia and linked to the intelligence agencies and to the White House, and you can see the channels of bringing this in from Latin America. Librium experimentation at Vacaville's Category E and C was directed illegally by the CIA through the Stanford Research and was administered to certain members of the Black Cultural Association. That brings to mind the problems of psychosurgery and the state of mind of the people in Los Angeles that were burned alive at the time the six members of the SLA were slaughtered. I have yet to see, there were people in the house, three or four of them, more than that, that came and left, and I didn't see anything about the state of mind because Donald DeFreeze was acting out of contact with reality. We've talked about that. He was ready to die on recruiting members for his legendary army. But a woman this last Tuesday, June the 4th, since our show last week, Christine Johnson, has given the first public off-the-record opinion of the state of mind of the people who were sharing her home. She was mentioning to the press last week the sole survivor of the death house. She was inside the house and she was fell asleep. And Miss Johnson was saying that, still shaky, she woke up. It was early. This was the shootout was at 5:30, and she woke up from what she called a drugged sleep. She woke up from a drugged sleep 40 minutes after the first bark of the gunfire. That's the one that was ran out and was almost shot, who escaped from the house. The authorities believed the fire was started by a firebomb. She was in a drugged sleep. Now, it would be very hard to see your house completely surrounded with police out on the front streets. Cameras were getting set up. An ambush was going to take place. Seven people in there have ammunition lined up. They're putting on their belts. They're wearing gas masks. And you're not awake to see the action or to leave there. That I didn't hold her as a hostage, but she was in a drugged sleep. And I think that word is important, that she could have been burned alive. The police then could justify, we had to shoot them because they would endanger other people. Look what they did to this innocent woman. She was drugged, and that's a very hard time to be drugged with all that action taking place. Your adrenaline would be working overtime. Then she went on to say, this is interesting, she identified four members of the SLA, Patricia, Ms. Moon, Salzik, Camilla Hall, William, and Emily Harris. Well, if she identifies the Harrises, and the Harrises weren't there, they were with Patricia somewhere, then what about the other identifications of the SLA, all these charges on Patricia and so forth that are brought up? If she can't identify them, how can anybody else? They were living in her house. But she said that the one person that she noticed was Camilla Hall, and she says, she frightened me. She was most frightened by Camilla Hall, and that was allegedly the most gentle of the group. She had two bottles in her hand, Miss Johnson said, and seems like something white was around the bottles, and she was walking around the bottles, and she looked like a zombie to me, half smiling. Now, that is a very funny way to take a revolutionary stand against the law enforcement out there. You're ready to die, and you're walking around with two bottles and a zombie smile. And I quote this quotation because the people that survived the killings in San Francisco, the zebra killings, I know their program. They're people that have been inside the prison system, turned into zombies through medication, electrodes, hypnosis, techniques which I'm putting together. I'm making these charges because I'm getting many letters and sources of information coming in. And to come down on the prison system and stop paroles, you can say, well, see, we let them out, and look what happened. They've turned them into zombies. They promise them, like this man at Soledad, we'll let you out if you kill somebody. So here is Camilla Hall looking like a zombie, and I'm sure Mrs. Johnson hasn't read the San Francisco paper that described the zombies up in the Bay Area. Now, another factor about Ronald Reagan and his School for Nonviolence and connections with the Stanford, the Hoover Center on Violence, RAND Corporation, using Colston Breast Brook, is that Ronald Reagan has been pushing since last year to get that study going down at UCLA, which is not to study the causes of violence. It's to take care of the Indian, the Mexican, the Chicano, as he becomes violent, as genocide proceeds and his food is cut off and the price of beans has gone over 10 times and he's starving, you pull them off the street. The director of the medical school at UCLA, the head of the whole medical school, is Sherman Mellencoff, somebody I used to date, go to dancing school with in Beverly Hills when I was didn't know any better. His brother, Abe Mellencoff, is the editor of the Chronicle in San Francisco. Sherman Mellencoff's medical school would run that school for violence for about. Abe Mellencoff is named by Tim Finley, who wrote for the Chronicle, as stopping all evidence in the news media in San Francisco that it was police provocateur, or there was another side to the SLA story. The desk at the Chronicle has killed every story. The things that I read on to you at the air, they had the same information at press conferences. The news editor that keeps it out from the news up there is the brother, Abe Mellencoff, just coincidentally the brother of Sherman Mellencoff, who had run the School for Violence, which was another one of the 15 motives for the SLA to be created. Our time is up. We'll see you next week. The news keeps coming along, some bad, some good. Keep your chin up and stay alive. You guys, stay alive.
This has been Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel, who for over 10 years has been researching the facts behind the political assassinations in this country so that the truth may be revealed. Dialogue Conspiracy originates with KLRB-FM in Carmel, California.